Hey everyone, welcome to I Just Want to See, the Documentary Review Podcast. This is episode 2. Today's episode we're going to have a sports theme. Sometimes we're going to have themes, sometimes we won't. It just so happens that this episode's two films just happen to be two sports documentaries. One theme I can absolutely guarantee you that we're going to have sometime in the near future is picks from Dani, my girlfriend. She's picked out a few movies, actually more than a few, picked out probably, I don't know, 5-6 films from Netflix that I will probably end up reviewing sometime down the road. And she just told me today she went to the library and picked up a few more. So I'm sure sometime in the next few episodes we'll be looking at picks from Dani. Hopefully they turn out as well as the ones I've picked, but we'll wait to see. We're going to look at two films today, one featuring athletes in what I would call the new America's game, NFL football, and the other featuring athletes in a sport that was at one time the most one of the most viewed in America, professional bowling. But let's start with the NFL film. We're going to take a look at 2 Days in April. It's a film by Don Argott. And just a little bit of background, over the last 15 years or so, the NFL has pretty much taken over as America's true sports pastime. You could attribute that to slick TV production, help from the networks in the way of coverage, the general accessibility of the game, lockouts in baseball, and fantasy leagues, office pools, you name it. The NFL has pretty much established itself as the preeminent sports league in the United States. And if you don't believe me, just take a look at the television ratings and you'll witness the popularity of the NFL. And if you don't have access to Nielsen ratings, just drive through any city, drive through Philly, through Dallas, through Pittsburgh, any city really that has an NFL team on game day. And you'll find that everything is just a little less crowded, everything moves a little bit slower, that's because of the NFL. Everybody's huddled around their TVs waiting to watch the big game, or they're tailgating, at home. They have friends, family over. Or if you really want an indication of how big the NFL is, take a walk through those cities on the day after a game. And it can be even more telling of how big a grip the game has. People will either be talking Super Bowl, or some are going to be ready to jump off of a building depending on how the team did on Sunday. And the NFL really, in my opinion, it's become an event that really transcends just the game itself. It's now become a bonding event of sorts for families. Generations of families, they watch the games together. People tailgate in ridiculous weather, like you see in, say, Buffalo or Green Bay, for hours and hours before the game. The game is almost like an afterthought at that point. Don't tell that to those fans, but there's two events. There's a tailgate, and then there's the actual game itself. And then you always have the Super Bowl parties, where a lot of people gather to watch just as much as the game as they do the commercials. And it's something that you see guys, girls, young, old, doesn't really matter. A lot of people go to Super Bowl parties. So to me, the NFL has really done a very good job at making itself actually part of the American fabric, in the way that baseball used to be. The NFL seems to have taken that place. And all this being said, the NFL is really just a juggernaut, and fueling this are the teams and the players that make up those teams. And some of this might be known by you listening. Some of you might not know exactly how the process works, but every year teams are built via the NFL draft. In college kids, they basically go from, I'll call them quote unquote student athletes, to millionaires in one afternoon. Teams get that quarterback that's going to lead them to the Super Bowl in the years to come, and the kids get that big payday that they've been working, almost all their lives for. And the days leading up to the 2 days and about 30 hours of the NFL draft, those are the days that we as fans have had little access to over the years. There has been an attempt by the NFL Network to cover the NFL combines. However, they do it in a pretty mind-numbing fashion. It's very sanitary. It's very polished of what all is going on in Indianapolis every February. But we really just get a look at the end product. We don't really get to see all of the work that goes into the process before getting and during the combines. And generally speaking, the way that draftees will work their way from the end of their college careers to the NFL, they'll go to a game such as a Senior Bowl. A Senior Bowl is kind of like an all-star game for all seniors in college, you know, those that are going to most likely end up in the NFL. After the Senior Bowl, players will go to the NFL Combine. The NFL Combine, for those of you that don't know, is more or less a testing ground for NFL players. They are measured in every way possible, physically, mentally. They are put through the ringer over the course of several days in Indianapolis. They're interviewed. They do ridiculous skill testing, and it really is a meat market during those few days in Indianapolis. And then finally, players and colleges host what are known as pro days, where workouts from the combine are replicated at college campuses. The thought is that, you know, some kids might go to the combine in Indianapolis and might not perform as well under the pressure that they might at home. And it also allows teams to get a little bit more of a personal glimpse of prospective draftees. So what this film does really is it chronicles the journey from becoming a college player to the NFL for four players. While this does show the players at each of the three stops along the way, I think really what's more interesting is to see what happens before and after each step. You know, us as sports fans, we think that, you know, thanks to ESPN and their incessant coverage of the NFL and the NFL Network and the internet, that we have an idea of what goes on, but we really have no idea as to the intensity of the physical workouts and the mental workouts and the mental examinations that take place for each and every prospect. It really becomes a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job for them to get themselves ready for the big days, you know, on the path to the draft. They're consulted by ex-coaches, trainers, psychologists, Olympic gold medalists, business experts, pretty much anybody and everybody, in an attempt to gain any edge in the months to come, whether it be on the field and workouts or in interviews with NFL team executives. Now, all these resources, they are provided by sports agency representatives. And, you know, obviously they have a vested interest in their clients being drafted higher, because the higher that you're drafted, the more money that you make in the NFL. So they have a vested interest in it, so they basically pull out all the stops that they can to get you ready for the NFL draft, to get you drafted as high as possible so that everybody walks away with a lot of money. So the film does presents a generally likable group of players that it pretty much spans the spectrum of potential in the NFL. You have some guys that are going to go early, some guys are going to go in the middle, some guys are going to go at the end. However, in watching the film, it appeared as though the director and the producer were sort of forced to tell the story through the lens of IMG, who happens to be the sports agency representing the four athletes in the film. And there were a few times throughout the film during the cut scenes in between, you know, one step to another, where they would just have some words on the screen saying what was going on, where they would use, you know, phrases such as our athletes, our groups. And it sort of let it be known without it being said that, you know, IMG definitely had some say in the way that the film was presented. And after I watched the film, actually this evening, I went and did a little bit of research on the film, and sure enough, I found out that, IMG did in fact clear everything in the film. There's about 150 hours of film footage put together for about a 90-minute film, and sure enough, IMG had to clear everything first before it was ever seen. That being said, all of that really didn't cloud the, film much at all, I would say. The viewer were given access to parts of the NFL process that not even NFL networks will, deliver. And like I said, while we thought we might have known the process before, watching 2 Days in April, it'll really give you a much better appreciation of the work that, goes into making the NFL. And also of note, I think, is if you do a little bit of Googling about the film, you'll find some information and you'll really appreciate actually the efforts of the producer to get the film even made. It took nearly 2 years to get it on the street, and that was after some legal battles and a lot of red tape, and the film almost never came to be seen. However, you know, finally we're fortunate enough to get to see it. And it's neat, you know, that, we actually get to see it a couple of years later than, you know, possibly anticipated, because now we get to see these guys that are in the film, and we know where they are now, and we can, you know, follow the progression a little bit easier. So all in all, I'd have to say, you know, if you're a football fan, go ahead and pick up 2 Days in April. I don't necessarily think it's one of those films that will transcend, you know, all groups of people. I can't really see non-football fans being that interested in it. There are certain elements, you know, certain basic elements that even non-football fans can pick up. However, you know, while there is, you know, some human drama involved, I think to really get true appreciation of the whole film, it definitely helps to be a football fan. But I think Danny might have watched part of this film with me, and yeah, she definitely did. And I think there were even parts of it that that she was able to appreciate. So I use her as kind of the gauge of whether everybody can watch these movies, because I tend to, you know, pick up a lot of movies that I have a, you know, an interest in before I even view them. So it's easier for me to get wrapped up in them. But if I can get her watching them and get her, you know, a little bit interested, then it tells me that that the film has done a pretty good job of, you know, reaching out beyond just its core audience. So let's go on to the second film. We're going to take a look at A League of Ordinary Gentlemen. It's a film by Christopher Brown. And generally speaking, when, somebody talks about bowling, it's usually followed by a reference of one of two things, I found. One is either the movie Kingpin, or two, it's a general comment about fat guys drinking beer and smoking cigars in their local seedy bowling alley. I can't really speak for Kingpin, since I've really only ever seen about 10 minutes of it, but I can speak for the fat guys drinking beer and bowling. Yeah, I'm not going to lie, this can definitely be a, case in some places around the country, and in some leagues around the country, and I would know, because I was in a few of those leagues back home in Pennsylvania. And, you know, while guys, you know, do drink and bowl while they hang out with their friends, and, you know, just generally bullshit, there are a number of, you know, pretty talented bowlers in each house every single night. And however, you know, bowling's been portrayed as a blue collar game played by blue collar guys, and for the most part, you know, that really is true. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, all of us that do it are Neanderthals by any means. So this being said, you know, the sport does have a bit of an identity crisis, and, you know, this identity crisis, I think, has sort of crept itself into professional bowling as we know it, and as we knew it, you know, as recently as about 10, 15 years ago. For years and years, back in the, you know, really from the 50s all the way through the early 90s or so, the Professional Bowling Association, or as I'll refer to them, the PBA, was one of the highest rated programs that ABC had to offer. Much like the NFL is now, families would gather around and they'd watch the PBA on Saturday afternoons. They'd watch for 90 minutes or 2 hours, depending on, you know, what the format of the tournament was. And my father and I, we used to do it for a lot of years after he would pick me up from my Saturday morning junior leagues or tournaments all around the area. We'd come home and maybe stop at a pizza shop on the way home and then go home and, you know, maybe catch the last hour of the PBA broadcast. So it is definitely something, and again, the numbers don't lie, that a lot of people did for many, many years, many decades, really. Bowling back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, it was a game played by regular people and was viewed by, you know, common people for many decades. However, as things change over time, people change, and the game really didn't change accordingly. And, you know, when the 90s arrived, the popularity, it was basically at an all-time low. And this kind of coincides with, you know, when people began to have a lot more options for their sports viewing. And, you know, there was a gazillion sports that are on TV, a lot of which were new, a little bit faster paced than bowling, which isn't saying much, but the fact of the matter is that people just didn't watch bowling. It had, you know, it basically been left in the dust of just about every sport out there imaginable. And what happened is advertising dollars, sponsorships, they basically fueled the PBA. And the reason for this is because, you know, you go to a bowling event and there's only space for a few hundred people, or nowadays with some of the arena tournaments, maybe a few thousand. So you're not going to make any money at the gate. So at the end of the day, really what you need is advertisers, advertising on TV and with the players, and you need sponsorship, sponsoring the tournament, sponsoring the players. And without those dollars, the PBA really isn't able to exist in a successful form. And what had occurred is, just like the viewers, the dollars started to be diverted to other sports during the 90s, and this basically led to less money for the league, less money for the players, and it meant harder times for the PBA and even harder times for those bowlers wanting to, you know, ply their trade on the lanes. So in the year 2000, former Microsoft executives actually went and purchased the PBA. And their very first move that they made was to hire a former Nike executive by the name of Steve Miller to try and resurrect, you know, this once powerful franchise. And the film, it not only chronicles the efforts of Miller behind and what I would say on the scenes of to try and pump up the PBA product out in the media, but it also takes us inside the lives of the bowlers on the circuit. And, you know, both of these things take place at the same time. They show you a bit of Miller and they show you a bit of the players. Bit of Miller, bit of the players. At the end of the day, you know, while, you know, watching the things of Miller are definitely interesting, especially if you have an interest in bowling, I think it's really the players that make the film interesting, and that can, you know, I think that will allow just about anybody to view the film, pick it up, and be able to appreciate it. A lot of people think that, you know, bowling for a living, it can't really be that difficult. I mean, after all, it's bowling. Fat guys drinking beer do it. However, there's a lot that people really don't realize about bowlers on the national tours. They often end up having to go from destination to destination in a car or an RV. They stay in some low-end hotels, and they have to bowl, you know, sometimes, you know, almost 30 games in a few days to make televised finals. And that's just really in hopes of covering their expenses to go forward to the next tournament. If you have a bad tournament and you don't make one of the various cuts, you're going to walk home with no money, let alone any money to cover your expenses. And if you think of bowling, you know, say 20 or 30 games in a few days is easy, I would definitely challenge you to even just go and bowl five and see how you feel that day and the next day. And to do that week after week after week, when you throw on the, you know, less than luxurious travel accommodations and rooms, and it definitely makes for a really difficult go. And in this film, you know, in a lot of documentaries, I think viewers are given people to root for, those not to root for, and, you know, people that really just make you shake your head, laugh a little bit. And this film definitely doesn't fall short. There's really profiles of about four major bowlers. You know, a couple that pretty much walk the straight and narrow. One that is definitely a little bit more wild. And one that is trying to recapture old glory. And, you know, as strange as some of these guys may be, I think in the end, given the you know, the history of the PBA, I think that you really, you know, come away from the movie, you know, genuinely pulling for everybody involved, even the guy trying to, you know, relive the glory days and is left to sing karaoke in bowling bars. It's a little bit sad, but, you know, I found myself still wanting the guy to succeed. You know, because of this, I don't necessarily think that you have to be a bowling fan to enjoy the film. Once again, Danny watched some of it, and we still talk about some of the guys in the film to this day. So again, that's, you know, good enough testament as to the quality of the film, at least for me. If we still talk about it and bring it up, it's at least memorable. And you know, for me, I knew a lot of the things that these guys have to go through, but it was still neat to actually get to see it on film. And I think that, you know, the characters are interesting enough and the story itself is interesting enough. It's a, you know, a classic American underdog kind of story. So I think that, you know, anybody could really pick up this film without having a former knowledge or former interest in bowling. It's a really short view. It's maybe 90 minutes. And I think you would be happy with it. So at the end of the day, we had 2 days in April. We had A League of Ordinary Gentlemen, both of which I'd recommend. You're probably starting to wonder if I'm ever going to say anything bad about a movie. But it turns out I just rule at picky movies. No, I don't know what the reason is for that. But I'm sure that eventually they're going to be. Actually, there's one film that if I do review it, I know will be getting less than stellar reviews. It'll be getting average reviews. But so far, I've been pretty lucky. And it's more fun to actually review movies that you enjoy than ones you don't. So that is it for this episode. Again, if you have any comments, suggestions, or anything at all, just feel free to drop me a line at ijustwannasee@gmail.com, and I'll take a look and maybe you know, read the email later on the air, or just respond. So anyway, that is it. Hope you enjoyed, and I'll talk to you next time. See you.